Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingit, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingit here with you on NFL Trade Deadline Day. We will keep you apprised of all things happening around the NFL and, of course, with the Tennessee Titans throughout the program. The NFL trade deadline, I believe, is 3 p.m. Central. Nothing happening with the Titans yet, though Jeremy Fowler of ESPN tweeted about an hour ago that the Titans have received inquiries on defensive line players, including Arden Key and Sebastian Joseph Day, per sources. Nothing has materialized as of this morning, but could be one to watch if a team steps up with a strong offer. So we will keep an eye on Arden Key.
Would that be like a Will Wade strong-ass offer? Would that be the type of offer we're talking about here?
It could be.
We will see.
I mean, that's a real offer. I mean, that's what we're talking here.
Mm.
The big trade of the day so far, the Detroit Lions are acquiring former Pro Bowl defensive end Za'Darius Smith in a trade with the Cleveland Browns. Mm. Those two have been linked for some time. The Lions are clearly going for it, and I don't blame them. They've been excellent this season. They acquire Za'Darius Smith in a trade with the Browns. It is Smith and a seventh-round pick to Detroit for a fifth and a sixth. So if you're looking for any sort of comps for, say, a Harold Landry trade, mm-hmm. perhaps, which I'm not expecting to happen, but something tells me if that were to happen, the blueprint has been provided for us of what that trade could look like.
There's a lot of fifths and sixths and sevenths. I think time will tell, but it'll be interesting. Like, if you have like 7 sixth-round picks, and you go 2 for 7, like, that's good, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, this is, everybody's like, you know, who cares? It's a 6th-round pick, right? It's a 7th-round pick. But if you have like 3 of them, like, hopefully one of them works, right?
Yeah, you would hope.
That's the idea anyway, right?
You would hope that at least one of them hit.
But this is a good test because there is a lot of, well, you know, what's the value? Jared has really gone off on the value of a 7th-round pick. He's been hammering away at Malik Willis has done really well, and all they got was a 7th-round pick, which amounts to a bag of footballs or whatever he says.
But was anybody going to give you more than that?
No. They got something.
And exactly.
Cortland Finnegan was a 7th-round pick. Like, there are 7th-round picks that make the team and help the team.
Yeah,
at
I mean, it just depends on, you know, who that guy is. So, I mean, 7th-round picks and 6th-round picks are not throwaway picks. They're not. Now, the likelihood of those guys sticking on your team are low, but it's not like, oh, we will never find anything in a 7th-round pick, so we might as well not even take. Matter of fact, we just give you the guy and you keep your 7th-round pick. No, franchises, organizations don't think like that.
In the NHL, they call that future considerations.
Yeah, it's
Freddie Charles.
It's just,
which means nothing.
Listen, give me the pick and I give you the player. You know, and then hopefully you can get enough of those picks that you could potentially, you know, package them and, you know, move up maybe even around. So, you know, you may see some trades today where, you know, a 7th-round pick is involved. That's not going to stop a team from whether they're going to part ways with a guy or not. They just, a lot of times, they just want some compensation back just to make it feel like it was an even swap.
So according to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, the Titans have received inquiries on Arden Key and Sebastian Joseph Day. We'll keep an eye on that and the rest of the NFL when it comes to the trade deadline, which is in a few hours. When we know something, you'll know something. So we will be monitoring this all show long. Willie will have to depart later in the program to join the Nashville Predators on their back-to-back road trip starting tomorrow night in Washington. Anything happening in Washington, D.C. tonight?
Maybe a little something.
Don't think so.
Maybe a little something.
Some.
Anything going on in our country, particularly in Washington, D.C. tonight? I don't know.
What is the... Is the Wizards playing?
They might be
tonight?
Playing.
I don't think so.
I don't think the Wizards are playing.
They might be waiting for the Commanders to make a trade. That
exactly.
might be it.
That
I think that's what it is.
Commanders are doing
and apparently,
well.
According yeah. to multiple reporters, players are clamoring to play for the Commanders. When
oh,
was the
wow.
last time you heard that?
Oh, wow.
Man.
Oh, wow.
Are the Washington Bullets coming back? Willie liked that one.
Wes Unseld?
Yes.
Kevin Greavy,
oh,
Bobby Dandridge.
Exactly.
Bring back the Baltimore yeah. Bullets, personally.
Wow, there you go.
Oh,
we
now
can
you're
go
going
even
way
further.
Back.
Yes.
Now you're going way back.
Yes.
But
the Predators, they leave on a sour note. They lose last night 3-0 to the Los Angeles Kings to drop to 4-7-1 on the season, 3-6-0 at home. 9 of their first 12 games at home, they lose 6 of 9. The Predators, a season-low 16 shots on goal last night. They were trailing entering the third period. They gave up an early goal in the third period in the opening minute to former teammate, for some of them, Kevin Fiala, former member of the Nashville Predators. So they're down 2-0 for the majority of the third period. It took them more than 16 minutes to get their first shot on goal. I believe it came with 3:55 left in the period, down 2-0. The Predators could not get a shot on goal for more than 15 minutes despite trailing. We keep talking about the same things. Last night, as I said, a season low in shots, but through most of the season, they've been at or near the top of the league in shots on goal per game. But that's a bit deceiving because this team has struggled to get shots on net from the areas of the ice that they need to. And what's even more mystifying about this, Willie, is last season the Predators were one of the best teams in the league at getting shots on net from the slot, the inner slot, that so-called home plate area in front of the net where most goals are scored. They've gone from one of the best teams in the league at 5-on-5 particularly to one of the worst teams in the league. It's quite confounding what's been going on with the Predators and their inability to get to the high percentage scoring areas.
I think you said it well. I think the troubling part right now, other than just the mindset, there's a mental part of it, and then there's the system part of it, the X's and O part of it, right? Two things. And they're both related, as you know, D-Mace. Like sometimes when you feel better mentally and you're confident, then the X and O's, they take care of themselves. But from the X and O standpoint, last year, when they were 5-10, and you know, right now 4-7-1, you could argue they're off to a better start than last year's team, who went 5-10, and then figured it all out. But last year, this is the troubling. This is the thing that is a little worrisome. Last year, I think you saw the underlying numbers look a little better. Even when they were 5-10, you were saying the goaltending hasn't been great, but they are getting the quality looks. You were starting to see the framework, the DNA of a team that was doing the right things, playing the system. It just hadn't kicked in. This year, the analytics more match the record of the team. And the 5-on-5 is the most glaring problem. And the majority of the game is played 5-on-5. The special teams have been pretty good, but the 5-on-5, night in and night out, has been a very inconsistent situation. And last night they faced a team that has very good structure. The Kings are one of the better teams at not letting you get to the home plate area. And unlike the Boston game, the one game where they really did well to get to that area against the tough defensive team, they didn't get anything last night. It was very frustrating, and that's where the mental part has come in. And there were some interesting comments by Andrew Brunette after the game about just the frustration. You could see it on their faces. They're looking around, you could see the confidence kind of sagging. They just couldn't get it going like they have, and they are constantly falling behind, so there's a higher stress level. And so it's taking its toll in frustration.
And sometimes, as Andrew Burnett pointed out, the more frustrated you get, the worse it gets. The harder you try, the less effective you are.
Yeah, I think I said this last week. Your frustration needs to turn into focus. Mm-hmm. The more frustrated you get, the more focused you should become at getting the task done, whatever it may be. Now, the whole team is frustrated, and it's evident. And if you're not frustrated, then you don't have a competitive bone in your body. But you got to take that frustration and channel it the right way. Luke Shen, I'm going to read this. Luke Shen said something interesting, and he talked about the frustration. He said the frustration was visible with the lack of offense, knowing that the team has plenty of forwards with scoring ability. There's a couple of guys in the league that can wind it up where they can play from the outside and create opportunities. We've got a couple of guys that can score from out there, but the majority of the goals are scored out around the paint. So he said, listen, it's kind of like basketball before the advent really of the three-point. A lot of the baskets were scored in the paint. Yeah, you had shooters like Reggie Miller and guys like that that could hit from outside, but the majority of the stuff was done in the paint. That's what the Predators, that's what Shen is saying. Like, we got a few guys that can, and we all know who those guys are, that can shoot it from the outside, they can one-time it from the outside. But if we want to start winning consistently and doing things consistently, a lot of those goals has to start from the end and inside and then work its way out. It seems like they're playing perimeter basketball right now. And listen, if your shots are not falling, you're not going to win. Yep. And their shots are not falling. So what they have to do is find a way to get in the paint now and get some of those monkey goals. And I think that's a lot of the frustration, because it's like, we see it's not working outside. Let's go inside.
And it's not easy.
It's not easy.
To get in there. You got to pay a price. Mm-hmm. You got to take. And I did think in the second period last night, they did try to turn up the intensity. They Luke Shen picked a fight with Tanner Janot, and that was maybe the highlight of the game. They were going at it. And I mean, Tanner Janot is one of the most popular Predators, and we know how tough Tanner Janot is. And Luke Shen took him down. Like he got, and they had met a couple times before. They were going at it. So they tried to change the tone. Ryan O'Reilly got into a fight. He rarely ever, I think it was only his second ever in the regular season, fighting Major. But there was kind of a little cheap shot, he thought, on Gus Nyquist, and he said, let's go. Mm-hmm. So they tried to get the intensity going, but it didn't turn into what you're talking about, D-Mace, and that is just demanding to find the puck in the paint, in the scoring area, getting your nose in there. And it sounds easy for me to say
it does,
this, but this is how it's done. Luke Shen said it well, and the Kings, to their credit, just they never let him get in there. They made it very easy on their goalie. I didn't think Darcy Kuemper had to work very hard to get the shutout last night.
The Predators have scored 12 goals at 5-on-5 in 12 games. So one 5-on-5 goal per game. 12 is the lowest total in the NHL, which is not something that we expected from the Predators when they spent the money they did in free agency to sign two 40-goal scorers. Wes and Hermitage on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asks, what are the chances that Bruno can't play this style of fast hockey with these old players he signed? It seems like they aren't fast enough to run this scheme. What do you make of that?
It was asked last week at this time, and I think it's going to get asked until it looks different. My answer is going to be the same. It's still, we're 1 month into a six-month season. They were 5-10 last year. Although, as I said, the numbers do look different. But I think there's a belief that if they get it, there will be dividends on the other side. But it's fair to ask the question. I don't know how difficult that is. You'd have to ask somebody like Hal Gill or a player of how tough it is to change the system midstream.
Are you saying that Hal Gill was slow?
No, I'm saying Hal Gill's played in a lot of systems where the coaches get changed.
You slow, or
but also,
slow.
Or a coach makes an adjustment. Yeah, I think Hal Gill probably.
Hal Gill is slow now.
Liked a little.
He's probably faster than me still on the
probably
ice, but he's slow.
Enjoyed a little more leisurely system. Right?
Yes.
Exactly.
But I do think this is what you hear about the. And Andrew Burnett's the first to say, you know, it's taxing to play this system. You have to bring it every night. You can't just cruise along and say, we'll outskill you. Mm-hmm. You have to have a high motor to play it. But let's use Ryan O'Reilly as an example. He is not a fast skater at all. He thrived in that system last year. So you know it can work, even for a player who is older, mm-hmm. right? And not – Gus Nyquist, is he a Blazer? Not at all. Not at all. He had his best year ever last year. So I do not think it is the old guys can't play this fast system. I don't believe that. Otherwise, Nyquist, O'Reilly, guys like that would not have thrived like they did. I think O'Reilly and Nyquist might have had those guys have played a lot of years in the league. They were among their best regular seasons. O'Reilly's had some great years, obviously, but Nyquist had a career year.
Uh-huh.
O'Reilly, maybe top five, you know, as far as all-around play, uh-huh. first line. He was an incredibly effective player last year.
Now, was this a younger team last year? I'm asking that's a serious question because I don't know. But I know there are a lot of, you know, sort of guys without a lot of experience playing last year because of the situation they were in, trading off guys and seeing, you know, hey, listen, we're going to give this a shot, and if it works – And Barry said, either the way y'all players are going to tell me to make trades and make changes or not. So I guess those young guys that they brought up or whatnot, those guys went out and they did what they were supposed to do. And obviously, Barry didn't make too many moves toward the latter part of the season. But I'm just wondering, like, because sometimes in sports, when your back is completely against the wall or when you have nothing to play for, then you go out there and you just play carefree, you know, hockey or football or whatnot, because you know there's no expectation. The expectation is to go out there and play your hardest and see where that lands you. But then once you start to add in expectations, I think it sort of changes things just a little bit. Now you're not going out there, especially if you're not winning. Now you're not going out there playing so carefree. Now you're a little bit tense. Now you're a little bit hesitant with what you do. Now you don't truly trust what's in front of you.
I think
it's a hesitation across the board, and that slows you down.
I think you can appreciate as a receiver when they talk about that chemistry that a receiver and a quarterback have, or a receiving group, mm-hmm. like the play that's drawn up. There's three options. We're reading the defense. We know the coverage. And when everybody's on the same page, you don't even think about mm-hmm. it, right? And the quarterback, it's just autopilot. It's boom. This is where he's going to be. A D-Mace is going to be open right over here. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's missing. You hear the players talking about it. If there's this because they play so fast, then there's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of trust involved. If one guy is off, it throws off mm-hmm. the whole thing. Andrew Burnett said this is something to look for as you're watching the Predators play. He said, when we're playing well, you'll see all five gold jerseys in the TV screen. Mm-hmm. That's what to look for. The spacing is right. Everybody's in the right spot. Mm-hmm. If one guy's off, it can throw the whole play off. And so I think that's happening way too often right now.
There's too much hesitation going on,
right?
Because they don't trust one another,
right?
Fully,
I think that's a big thing.
One thing that's important to keep in mind, to Derek's point, is last season, it felt like everything good that happened with the Predators was like a cherry on top because expectations were low for the Predators last season. Barry Trotz tempered those expectations when they struggled out of the gate. Certainly, fans were frustrated when they were 5-10, but they understood what the plan was from Barry Trotz. It could be good, it could be bad. He was clear about that. When they made the postseason, I remember being on with the two of you in Caroline. We were talking about, you know, the playoffs and the series against the Canucks. And I said, at this point, it feels like everything that happens is just gravy for the Predators because we didn't expect them to be in the postseason. Most people did not expect them to be in the postseason. But to Derek's point, when you spend the money they did in free agency, you bring in the caliber of players, the name brand players that they brought in. And they're struggling. Not the team is struggling. And those players are struggling too.
Yes.
Steven Stamkos has not been good. He has zero goals at 5-on-5. Jonathan Marchessault had an unbelievable goal to win the game in overtime against the Columbus Blue Jackets a couple of weeks ago. Outside of that, he hasn't had too many memorable moments on the ice. Even Brady Shea is struggling mightily. So, I understand where that frustration is with Predators fans. And the thing that's really stuck out to me, particularly with Steven Stamkos, my concern entering the season, and even in the offseason when they first signed all of those players, was how much of a drop-off in production should we expect from Steven Stamkos, who, as Willie knows, is not a play driver at 5-on-5 anymore. He is not the engine that is going to get a line to go at this stage of his career. He was going from playing with two of the best players in the world, in my opinion, Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point. And now he's playing with a rotating cast of centers. He played center once himself in a game this season, but Juuso Parsonen, Colton Sissons, Tommy Novak, none of them have been able to hold down that spot. And I'm concerned that I agree with Willie. I do think that Steven Stamkos is too good of a goal scorer to be this, you know, to have this lack of production over the course of a full season. But I have just been so unimpressed with his performance at 5-on-5 this season.
Well, there's two different things because I think the power play, he has done exactly what the doctor ordered.
Other than
the puck hasn't gone in.
I would agree with that.
But he has been rifling shots. His shooting percentage is way down from what it normally is. I think we showed it last night. His overall shooting percentage for his career is over 16%. That's a really high percentage. And he's only got two goals. He's getting the shots. So I think the power play, that's what they had in mind when they signed him. The 5-on-5 part, there's no question, is a problem. And the other part of it, I think it's reasonable to say, well, this is where he is in his career. He's maybe not quite the play driver that he used to be 5-on-5. But the rest of his line, if somebody's a play driver and Marchessault's been on his line most of the time, then it still should create opportunities for Steven Stamkos. And collectively, they just have not figured that out. The fourth line looks better now that Colton Sissons is down there. That looks more like a fourth line that's doing more of the things that a fourth line should do. You know, grind, create energy, get you at a court occasional scoring chance. Colton Sissons had the best chance of anybody last night on a breakaway. Got robbed by Kemper. The first line, I think, has been pretty reliable. Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist. But lines two and three, especially 5-on-5, have been just have not been able to drive anything 5-on-5, and it's been really surprising for different reasons.
We'll see if the Predators can get back on track tomorrow against a surprisingly good Washington Capitals team, 6-1 at home. Alex Ovechkin, 9 points in his past four games. He has scored goals in all four of those games. He is 34 goals from tying Wayne Gretzky for most in NHL history. We shall see if if the Predators can prevent Alex Ovechkin from scoring and get a win tomorrow night. They sorely need one. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, our friend Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us. We'll talk Titans. We'll talk the NFL trade deadline and more. But tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick the Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night against the Capitals, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning at 8:45.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingen here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our friend Tim Hasselbeck. First of all, Tim, congratulations on a 10-0 season with the Ensworth Tigers. I understand you have a bye in the first round of the playoffs?
That's right. Thank you. First round bye. So it's been good. It's been good.
You can't lose.
Not this week,
Eli
at least.
Manning tailgating commercial.
Exactly.
We can't lose. That's good. I'm sure D. Mace, you know, was sitting in his palace live streaming our game. I did expect you to make the drive out to Memphis, D. Mace. Actually, who am I kidding? That was probably a private jet for you to Memphis. You probably don't do the job.
Hey, when y'all play a little bit closer to home, then I come. So
right, next Friday when we host a game.
There you go. Right there.
So, Tim, I want to start with the play at the end of the Titans-Patriots game in regulation. Drake Mays, touchdown. He held the ball for nearly 12 seconds before finding Ramondre Stevenson in the end zone to force overtime. I would love if you could take us into the mind of a quarterback, seeing as you are a quarterback, and what a quarterback does in that situation. It was an incredible play by Drake May, but take us through what it's like as a quarterback in that situation.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times as a quarterback, you're coached to have, you know, this internal clock in your head of how long you can hold on to the football. But I think and that oftentimes dictates, you know, your timing, how you play, when you get rid of the football, that type of stuff. But then obviously there are a few like rare circumstances where, you know, it's different. And the idea of like, you know, the clock in your head, that has to go out the window, and it's just about making a play. It's fourth down. It's a 2-point play. It's an end of the game scenario. I think that's kind of the feeling as a quarterback when you get in that environment is, okay, like, I've got to do something. Now, I'm abandoning kind of everything I've been taught as a quarterback in terms of the timing I need to play with or things that I can and can't do with the football, and I just need to find any way to make a play to give my team a chance. And so, I know that I talked to you guys, you know, pre-draft about how I felt about Drake May. Look, he is so talented, and that's a wild play. I think the only other guy I've seen with a play to go like a similar length is Donovan McNabb. Had a play against the Dallas Cowboys years ago that like felt like a 14-second play. But it was an incredible play by him. It's obviously hard to cover for that long, and typically if a guy can stay alive for that long, he's going to find someone open.
The NFL, since it began tracking these statistics, I think it was in 2016, the only other touchdown where the quarterback held the ball longer than Drake May was Jaden Daniels' Hail Mary the previous week. So,
that's incredible. That one kind of feels different. Like a lot of times you see quarterbacks do that. But like that's a similar, Adam, that's a very similar thing. Okay, Hail Mary, if it's where you can reach the field or you reach the end zone, then like that's great. You can throw it in the end zone. But you also have to give guys the time to get down there. And so going back a week, like that was obviously a great job. Look at that, two young quarterbacks, making insane plays for the team.
Today is the NFL trade deadline, 3 p.m. Central, if I'm not mistaken. The Titans made a couple of trades a couple of weeks ago, trading DeAndre Hopkins and Ernest Jones. There are reports that they could be looking to move one of their defensive linemen, such as Arden Key or Sebastian Joseph Day. If you were in the Titans' shoes, if you were Rand Carthon, how would you approach today? Would you make any more moves if you were the Titans?
Yeah, I think it would have to be great, and I would have to feel like I was really winning the trade. And I think some of that has to do with, like, coming off of this week's game, you know, a little bit of optimism in the locker room. Because even if you are making the decision that you're building for the future, like, you still have a long way to go. And, like, morale in your building, matters. I mean, like, look at the Saints, for example. Like, look, that was a team that had high aspirations. And then, you know, things start to not go well because of injuries and other things. And then the next thing you know, like, the wheels have completely come off. You can't find a win, and now you're firing your head coach. And I'm not saying that that would happen here, but, like, you know, I do think that even when you're rebuilding, you have to have an idea for how morale in the building is. So, like, I want to do it. I would have to really feel like it was a great deal because you were taking advantage of somebody who, you know, had a situation of need.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the undefeated Innsworth Tigers, who have a bye this week. So I can't wait to see them play the next following week.
This is the one week you're going to come out to campus. You come out to Frisk campus out on Highway 100 on Friday night. You're going to be like, hey, Tim, I was here. Where is everybody? Come on, don't do that.
No, dang it. The jig is up.
I don't want to deal with the parking. I don't want to deal with parking. I'm going to come out this Friday.
It's like, man, I came out. Wasn't nobody there, man. Come on. Didn't nobody give me the memo. But is this because obviously – you know, there's a lot going on in regards to Will Levis and the injury, him not playing well at the beginning of the season when he was a starter, to when is he going to be back underneath center? And Brian Callahan has said, listen, when he's healthy, he's our guy. But even with that being said, is this sort of like the final chance for Will Levis to change the minds of those that are going to be making, you know, the decisions when it comes to the draft and who they draft or what quarterback they may draft?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. Like, I got a text from somebody during the Seattle game this week, and, you know, I don't know if you guys, you know, how closely you saw, but basically Geno Smith throws two terrible interceptions. It basically, you know, is why they end up losing the game. Obviously Stafford makes some plays late in the game, you know, for the Rams to win it. But the text I got was, well, Seattle's going to be drafting a quarterback, you know? And so, yeah, like 100%, like that's what's happening. And I think the other thing that's happening is looking how he does, assuming he's back in the lineup. If you know, we think that that's what's going to happen based on what Brian Callahan said. He's also kind of, you know, not kind of, he's putting his resume out there for the rest of the league, a little bit like guys like Drew Locke or Mason Rudolph, guys that had opportunities to be starters, Jameis Winston, like whoever it may be, the guys that were starters, that look, what they did was they maybe played themselves into a different role in their time in the National Football League. So, you know, I just say that to say that, like, there's a lot of pressure on Will Levis. So even when you talk about a team that's like, oh, these aren't meaningful games in November and December, you know, for a young quarterback, you know, you can kind of just go out there and play free and cut it loose. It's like, not really, because you're actually kind of playing for your football future. Mm-hmm. So there's immense pressure, I think, on guys in those situations.
Now, quickly, let me segue out of the Titans and go to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm watching Kansas City yesterday, and it occurred to me, are they this sort of generation's version of the New England Patriots, or this mm-hmm. generation's version of the San Francisco 49ers when they were winning championships? Because you look at them, as you watch them play, they have some key players, more importantly the quarterback, and then the defensive lineman in Jones. But mm-hmm. this isn't a team that has, like, superstars littered everywhere. But because of the head coach and the quarterback combination, it seems like no matter what happens in the game, they always have a chance to win. And it was that way no matter what was going on in the game in New England. You knew if the game was close, you had a chance to win it. Because why? Bill Belichick, but most importantly, Tom Brady.
Yeah, no, 100%. I would actually say this, and I felt this way when he was in Philadelphia. There was a stretch where it was Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb, and the defensive coordinator was Jim Johnson. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like four straight NFC championship games or something. Mm-hmm. No, they just happened to kind of run into greatest show on turf. Then they ran into, you know, a Tampa team that was extremely loaded. But like, so like Andy was that good back then. And so I think, like, the run that Belichick had and all that stuff, obviously, like, for a long time, everyone's like, hey, you know, greatest coach of all time, clearly with Brady, you know, greatest quarterback of all time. And, like, you know, they were, you know, pairing those two, you know, as the reason. But, like, also Belichick was a defensive coordinator, had guys like Dean Pease and others that were doing a good job with the defense. I really think, especially when you look at what – the Chiefs have been on offense this season. And then look at what the Chiefs were on offense early last season in their struggles. Like, they were a defensive-led team at times last year early in the season. And I think you could say that same thing about him. And just the way that people would talk about Dick LeBeau at the Steelers, like, I think you need to talk about Steve Spagnuolo like that as, like, maybe the greatest defensive coordinator ever. Like, what in terms of what he's done. So yeah, I think it's Andy. I think it's Patrick Mahomes, and then I think the piece that doesn't get talked about enough, and I think he's that good, is Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator. So yeah, I think they are like this era's, you know, that team, because I mean, like, look, maybe the Lions will be good enough, maybe, but like that's always been the case. Like, there's maybe, but like if you said, all right, like, who should be the favorite? Who is the favorite? Yeah, it's got to be Kansas City.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, as you, I don't know if you were watching live last night, but I didn't get to see the game. I did see at the very end the Bucks tie it, and there was a lot of talk that they did an amazing job to get back and get to that point without Mike Evans, without Chris Godwin, and here they are. Should they have gone for two? In your mind, in that moment, it's easy to say it today, the day after, but like in the moment, where you think, because I did stop and say, are they going for one or are they going for two? And I saw Baker Mayfield sprinting off the field. It didn't look like they even pondered it.
Yeah, I think that's one of those situations where whatever you have in your book, like whatever the sheet says, I think exactly what you're talking about is like why you can't always go off of the sheet, right? So right. I don't know if you saw it. I was actually a couple weeks ago, I was at the Harvard Holy Cross game, okay? And it ended up being on Van Pelt's Bad Beats. That's why you would have seen it. But essentially what happened was Holy Cross ties the game after two Hail Mary attempts. I mean, it was wild. So they're down one. After two, they actually connect on the second Hail Mary, basically. And next thing you know, like, they just, without batting an eye, boom, we're going for two. Mm-hmm. And they don't get it. And you're like, oh, my gosh. And actually another game, Eastern Michigan had a game this weekend where they went for two to win it at the end. And so, yeah, I think it's easy now, sitting here now, knowing the result and all that stuff, to be like, I should have gone for two. But, like, you don't always get it. And then when you don't get it, you could say, well, man, like, you had the best team in the league, you know, on the ropes, and you had momentum. And
I guess that's the question, is when you are clearly the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, okay, if we lose the coin toss, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah,
Patrick Mahomes gets it, and it's game over. You never get the ball back. So when you're the decided underdog, that's what you're talking about, Tim, is that's not on the chart, right? That's the feel.
That's
the argument for, hey, if you lose, okay, but this was your best chance to win, not giving the ball back to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and then to your point, the personnel part of it, where you're like, oh, not only do we have these guys against the ropes and we're the underdog, like, we're really the underdog because, like, our best players aren't here with us. So, look, I think in that environment, I hate being the Monday morning quarterback thing on it. I think in that environment, going for two was the move. Like, I do in that environment. But, like, I don't hate the move by Todd Bowles to say, look, conditions aren't bad. this offense, you know, this Chiefs offense has not been amazing all year long. Like, we like our chances, and we feel like we have some momentum, and, like, the coin toss might go our way, you know? So, like, I don't, like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think it's right to consider it. I think the fact that he didn't hesitate, I think maybe gives you a glimpse into, like, what he was thinking. I think if there's hesitation, then you could maybe question the decision. But I think because there was no hesitation, I would find no fault in him.
Tim, if I'm reading this playoff bracket correctly, your Ensworth team will face the winner of Briarcrest and MBA in the next round, which means you will be pitted up against potentially Chris Sanders. There might be some division on this station.
Hey, can y'all beat that brakes off?
Never mind. There's no division,
there's
I guess.
There's never no division. I'm an Ensworth father. There's not a division whatsoever. I hope y'all beat the brakes off of them if y'all play.
Oh, that right? Well, listen, we don't know who will play. Whoever exactly. We play, I'm sure, be really talented week two opponent. And so, hey, listen, it's about – obviously you guys didn't get the message. It's about us. Right now, we're focusing on us, okay?
Like, coach talk, yes.
I'll give you, hey, listen, it used to drive me crazy. I just want everyone to know, like, I am fully invested in coach speak, okay? Fully invested.
Life by bumper sticker.
Yes. You know what I mean? I mean, man. Fully invested. Hey, great opponents, really just about us. We can do better. And the only reason I can say this right now is that all of our football players are in class.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, coach speak extraordinaire, joining us as he does every Tuesday. Tim, we'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good. One practice at a time. Guys, one show at a time.
That's right.
One show at a time.
One segment at a time. One show.
We just bagging them. That's
one
all we do.
One segment at a time. Yep, that's right. Thanks, Tim. Cheers, appreciate it.
Yep.
You just want him to beat the brakes off of Chris Sanders.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
First, NBA has to get past Briarcrest. Yeah, you got a point. And then they could play Tim Hasselbeck's mighty, mighty Ensworth Tigers. 615-737-1025. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee will release its first of six rankings tonight. What are we expecting? We'll break that down next. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee will release its first of six rankings tonight at 6 p.m. Central. I'm curious what the committee thinks of the college football season so far. I'm particularly intrigued by what they make of Alabama and whether Alabama, a two-loss Alabama team, could sneak into the playoff. I'm curious about their feelings on Indiana, the undefeated Indiana Hoosiers. Sorry, Derek. I know that they beat Michigan State over the weekend.
They didn't just beat them. Embarrassing.
Of course, I'm curious about Tennessee and where they fall into all of this. So as we await the first official rankings in the college football playoff,
all right, here's
what intrigues you most?
This is what intrigues me. I for years, at D-Mace, you'll remember this. This whole thing, this whole exercise of, ooh, here come the rankings on Tuesday night. Let's see who number four is. I every year would say this doesn't mean anything. Honestly, you could have been on that committee a couple years ago when they were choosing four. You could have done absolutely no work at all. You could have done all the work you wanted, or you could have mailed it in. And it would not have mattered one bit until the last vote. And that's when you had to decide, okay, who's number four, who's number five, right? And a lot of years, just like last year when Florida State was undefeated, you had some, you know, some things to consider, the injuries. Now, that's where it gets tough. But in November, who cares who number four is? But now, this year, with the new playoff format and at-large bids and everything, there is a lot more that you have to be tracking. Tiebreakers, strength of schedule. This is a little bit more like the NCAA basketball committee, where there's a lot more work involved. So now I am definitely paying more attention. So in case you were wondering, you're not going to get the speech from me every year when
whoever was hosting at the time, Caroline or Chase, or here come the ratings on Tuesday. Who's going to be number? I would always say, who cares? Yeah. It doesn't matter. There's a whole month of football left. This is much more intriguing.
Well, this is what I'm going to be interested in. Because if you just look at the regular rankings, it's totally different from the college power football or football power index. It's totally different from that. So are they going to lean more toward the college football power index, which has Texas number one, or will they go to the other? You know, just the regular rankings, where I think they have,
Oregon is number one.
Oregon's number one. So you have one that says Oregon's number one, but you have another that says Texas is number one. Where are they going to see teams like Miami, who's 9-0, Indiana, who's 9-0, BYU, who's 8-0?
Boise State is another interesting team.
So where are they going to slot these teams as we speak?
It's actually going to take work.
Exactly.
And making tough decisions.
Absolutely.
You've got a lot more decisions to make.
Is a one-loss Georgia, will they be placed in front of a Indiana team that's undefeated?
And people are going to be tracking if they come out and say, here's why we have this team. Because in a month, if you change your mind, they're going to go back and quote you. All these fans are going to say, mm-hmm. But you said on November 4th or 5th, this is what it was, and that's how you decided it. Because it's been very arbitrary, but now you got really tough decisions.
Yeah, you do. So, and then, they added in, if a player gets hurt, that affects. If you marquee player get hurt, that affects you in the standing. So there are a bunch of new things that they're putting in here that is going to affect whether your 9-0 or 8-0 Indiana Hoosiers will be ranked above a 7-1 Ohio State.
We have a major trade in the NFL to announce. The New Orleans Saints are trading 4-time Pro Bowl cornerback Marshawn Lattimore to the Washington Commanders. The Saints fired their coach. We talked about this the other day. I was quite giddy about that. But the fire sale appears to be on in New Orleans. The Commanders are acquiring Marshawn Lattimore. They're going for it. The Commanders are indeed going for it. So Marshawn Lattimore to the Commanders. No return on that yet, according to multiple reports. But big trade in the NFL. And we'll keep an eye on all things NFL trade deadline, especially as they relate to the Tennessee Titans. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, speaking of trades that the Tennessee Titans made, DeAndre Hopkins had quite the game last night, and then he did something that got a lot of people talking. We'll do that next. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
They're going for it, baby.
What's the return? Do we know?
Not yet. We don't know yet.
There are a lot of trades, which makes me wonder if the Titans will make one more.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.